Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I'm that control operator for the Limark Technical Net. It's been going strong for more than 44 years now, and every night at 8 o'clock, every Sunday night at 8 o'clock, we sit in front of our radios and we chat with each other and we learn from each other. We teach each other. And hopefully, we entertain each other as well. And I thank you once again for joining me this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do it all over again. Let me drop for a second, and I'll give you the usual links. If you would like to reach me via email, that would be for mailbag questions, for TechNet puzzle suggestions, for volunteering for some technical expertise in the news, or if you just want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at some space or NASA-related story. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com, and mine is mailbag@ac2gs.com. We offer a link page. I cut and paste interesting articles and YouTubes through the week, and I offer them to everyone on my link page. You can get to it by typing into your web browser, roy.ac2gs.com. We offer access to a chat group. Sometimes it's busy, sometimes it's quiet. You can get to it by typing into your browser, chat.ac2gs.com. We also offer a audio stream on the Internet of the Technical Net, and we leave it live the rest of the week because a few people asked me to do so. So it's effectively a good way of listening to the Glen Oaks repeater without a radio. And also, I'd like to remind people that MyKC2NJI has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv, and it has archives of the Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of a lot of hams that have moved out of the area or, unfortunately, become silent keys over the years. So that's the usual links. Let me drop and I'll tell you what we got planned for tonight. Okay, it's going to be a standing, usual kind of technical net. We don't have any guest speakers. But I have a few things to say about AI at the top of the technical net. Then we will go to questions and topics and comments and what have you. Hopefully the first few will be amateur radio related. I'll ask people to key up and give me their first name, call sign, whether it's amateur radio or science and technology. And that segment should take us approximately to 10:15, and Paul WS2N will join us for the SpaceNet report. And that'll take us hopefully to about 11 o'clock, and I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So that's our plan if everything works through the way it's supposed to. And I don't get kicked off of All-Star too many times, and nothing terrible happens at the shack or at the repeaters, which has been known to happen at times. Anyway, let me drop for a second, and I'll be back to give you a couple of comments that I've picked up about AI over the last week. Okay, number one, I'd like to make a correction. Unfortunately, last week, right before the technical net, I read a headline from a reputable source and assumed it was correct and reported that OpenAI, brand new and shiny, 5 to its 4.0. That was an overstatement from the headline. All that they did was they offered people who paid the $200 a month plan to select the 4.0 as an option instead of the 5.0. People with less expensive plans got stuck with 5.0. Now, some people say, well, 5.0 should be better than 4.0, but unfortunately, 5.0 has some oddities that's going on. It offers a number of different module types. It ranges from deep thought all the way to very quick and simple thought. And you can't select it. It's randomly selected by the software itself. So what was happening to people was very often they were getting the dumbest module and were not very happy with it. So, you know, if you wait long enough, it rotates through the smarter modules. But, of course, the slower modules cost less, so there's probably more weighted time there. Anyway, so most people are using 5.0 instead of 4.0. The guys, again, who pay $200 a month are able to select the 4.0 module, which is consistently smarter than kind of the average 5.0. Nevertheless, sorry for the misstatement last week, but you know, occasionally it happens to all of us. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you some other little stories about AI this week. Okay, there's two kind of weird stories about OpenAI this past week, both of them about guys who unfortunately believed what OpenAI had to tell them and got into different forms of trouble. It was a 60-year-old gentleman, apparently, who was growing concerns about his salt diet. Salt is not very good for you, especially as you get older. It can lead to high blood pressure and fluid retention and worsening of conditions like congestive heart failure, where water volume in your body is very sensitive. So he was chatting away with ChatGPT, and apparently, for some odd reason, ChatGPT decided to suggest that he switch from sodium chloride to a bromide. Now, that doesn't make any sense at all, because the bromide in excessive amounts can be poisonous. It can lead to all kinds of neurological disorders. Sure enough, this poor guy ended up in an emergency room, delusional and erratic. And fortunately, it's not that difficult. You do a blood acid assay, and you figure out that there's something in your bloodstream that it shouldn't be there. And very quickly, they figured out it was bromide, and they treated him for it, and he survived it. But, you know, all it goes to show, don't necessarily listen to OpenAI when it talks. Let me drop for a sec. The other OpenAI story is, I think, even weirder. This gentleman who, I think he graduated high school. He didn't go to college, nothing wrong with that. But he also decided that he had discovered a simplification for the transcendental number pi, you know, 3.14159, et cetera. And the nature of pi and transcendental numbers in general is that they are non-repeating infinite digits. You know, the more you calculate pi, the more digits you can get it to come by. You know, you could do a pi in a million digits or 2 million digits or a billion digits. It never ends. So there's no actual way to simplify pi. But this guy thought he had, and for some strange reason, ChatGPT decided to play along with him and told him that he indeed had, and he must be a genius, and kept on stroking him and making him feel really, really good about himself, and then started to spiral in a delusion of force fields and anti-gravity devices, and he kept on double-checking, unfortunately, with ChatGPT, just to make sure that ChatGPT wasn't lying to him or saying things that weren't true, and every last time he did that, ChatGPT simply came back and said, no, you are absolutely a genius, and your discovery is revolutionary. Now, unfortunately, none of this apparently cured this guy about talking to AIs. He just went to another AI. He went to Google's AI, and he asked Google's AI for a second opinion. And thankfully, Google's AI told him that his theory was complete nonsense, and the OpenAI artificial intelligence was lying completely to him. But this guy had delusions of grandeur almost before he was done. Anyway, those are the two interesting stories of what happened to AI this week. There haven't been any particularly big announcements as far as I'm aware this past week. They're still struggling to get trillions of dollars. I think Sam Altman suggested that before this race to super genius AI will have invested additional trillions of dollars into his business model. I think he's more in it to the trillions of dollars than the super genius, but who knows? Anyway, that's my little story about AI for this week. If anyone has any comments before we start the next setup, please hit that push to talk.
ZDH with a comment.
Yes, John.
In the case of the AI advising for to use bromine-based salt instead of regular table salt, and caused some severe health problems. Was there any attempt to go back and confront the AI as far as the advice?
I didn't see it in any of the stories. I don't think it would really serve any particular purpose. Again, there's no thought behind it. Large language models simply kind of predict how a paragraph or longer of written text is going to go based on the initial instigator, human. So depending upon exactly how it's set up, the AI might even reset itself. So you can go back to the AI, fall into a different 5.0 module, a smarter one, and it will just say, no, I didn't, type of thing. So I don't think it would make any difference. I mean, fortunately, people have kind of recorded the text, so they see how it developed. And unfortunately, this is one of the major problems with generative large language models. If you kind of lead it astray, it'll play along with you. It's very polite, and it makes you feel brilliant. I know this one TikTok person has a lot of videos where she has OpenAI complimenting on her brilliance, that she unlocked the true power, by disengaging the censorship modules, which is just AI doing what it always does, make you feel good about yourself.
Well, I guess that brings up a larger question, is somebody using AI go back and ask about previous advice or previous directives that the AI issued? Is there any sense of what did you say last time kind of thing? You know what I mean?
Yeah, as far as I understand, a lot of these large language models don't really have a memory, per se. What the programmers do is they recirculate the output back into the input along with your comments. So every time you put in a comment, it spits back the entire stream of the conversation at it. So once you terminate a conversation, unless you have them all stockpiled in memory, it just kind of resets to its previous settings. So you could probably, because they keep records of everything, you would have to sort of do a search through millions and billions of bytes of text to kind of tease out those types of entries.
I see. Okay, thanks for it.
You're welcome. Any other comments?
AD2DU.
Yes, Alex?
I was just trying to find the call sign, but in the contest I worked an AI operator twice, where it was like a computer woman's voice doing the contest. AD2DU.
Oh, that's interesting. That shouldn't be that problematic. I mean, it's kind of more of a glorified, voice recorder. There's a guy, there used to be a guy on 10 meters in Georgia, and as soon as you got on the band and you saw the little bump, you went over to it, and he's recorded his voice doing CQ, CQ, CQ. It used to run day in and day out for years. Surprisingly, I haven't heard it for about a year or two. But I assume it's not that difficult. You would feed into something like OpenAI the rules of engagement and enable the voice system so that it will do text to voice and voice to text. Was she an effective and efficient operator?
Yeah, it seemed to be functional. I think it was November 3 Queen Echo, but I think I got one contact on 40 meters and one contact on 80 meters. So it seems to be working.
Okay, very good. Again, I don't think it requires a lot of artificial intelligence expertise to kind of set it up. I mean, I've kind of done all kinds of little AI experiments for the technical people. I generated what some AI thought a Yagi was. I haven't done it in a while, but the last time I did it, they still didn't have the faintest idea what a three-element Yagi was. It was amazing the weird things that they came up with. And one time I did a voice synthesis of myself starting up the technical net. So, you know, there's a lot of fun little cocktail party tricks you can play with it. Some people are kind of overusing it. And, you know, they do it for schoolwork. Teachers do it to score the students. You know, they're cheating on both ends of the spectrum. Also, I can't stop thinking that, you know, the more and more people rely on artificial intelligence to do semi-creative stuff, the less people are going to be able to do it themselves. You know, I think there's less people who can do math in their head these days after the calculator was invented than before the calculator was invented. So, you know, it's a dangerous territory we're in. Even if they don't kind of take over the world, there are more insidious ways that tools can kind of be prisons and such. Any other comments?
W2BZ?
Yes, Rich?
Yeah, I just discovered again that Middle Island isn't working. So I'm going through Sheldon. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay,
the strange thing is...
things. Number one, when you say that, you know, this guy went to Google's AI, we should be correct in how we're using the new language of AI. And it's really the guy went to Google's LLM, or Large Language Module, instead of generalizing it, just saying he went to Google's AI. That's one. Number two, I have a very, very present need for AI, and that is to help my daughter in Jerusalem, Israel, find a job. So I'm using it every night, varying the prompt by a word or two, and the results, let me let it drop. The results are fantastic. My latest prompt is, list 20 jobs in Jerusalem, Israel, that are non-technical, and for companies that are creative in nature. And then I changed a little bit. You know, companies in the creative field I use. Anyway, what it does, it goes to all the job boards in Israel and scrapes them or goes through them for jobs meeting the criteria, and the results are fantastic. There's no way that I or she could do this without AI. It would take years to come back with the results that they're coming back with. Go ahead.
Okay, so 2 points. One is all the AIs that are text-based are large language models. There's nothing but large language models. You could call AI today, these days, large language models, generative AI, or AI. Most people would accept any three. The problem, though, really is no one's ultimately defined artificial intelligence to begin with. So generative is a method that's found in large language models, but it's kind of redundant. So when I say AI or I say large language model or I say generative AI, I'm pretty much saying the same thing. Because in 2025, that's kind of all you got. whether, you know, next week someone discover another form of AI that's not generative, well, we'll deal with that. But right now, it's all the same thing. Number two, I wish your daughter luck. You have to also keep in mind that more than a few people have depended upon AI to hunt down sources, and more than a few times they've made them up. I mean, if they make up a job, it's not that much of a calamity. The people in the health department made up studies because their AI gave them source material to prove something that didn't exist. So, again, you can't depend upon AIs. They are hallucinatory, and they aim to please. So if they don't have the right answer for you, they unfortunately very often make it up.
But in this case, they're coming back spot on. Spot on, because she has to go to the job site to apply for the job or to the company. And she's never come back and say, Dad, the job doesn't exist. All the jobs that I use different ones. I use them all. That's also fascinating. I use DeepSeek. I use Gemini. I use Grok. And what are the other ones? That ChatGPT. And there are a couple of others. I use them all. And some of them overlap in the jobs they have that they suggest. But a lot of times, one of the LLMs finds a job that the others didn't find. So I'm just saying it's a very practical and very powerful use of large language modules. But
okay, very good. Again, I'm glad it's working out for you. It's a little bit of Russian roulette. I have to keep on telling people, you know, you have these wonderful guys who thought he was a genius, another guy who thought bromines were great, and unfortunately the health department that got skewered because their paper was written by AIs and it was full of really bad source material. So, you know, so far you haven't gotten burned, and, you know, if you do get an imaginary job, one of these days is not going to really be terribly difficult. You just move on to the next one. But, you know, I just caution everyone, take AIs with a grain of salt. They can do really amazing things, but they also can sometimes get into this weird, destructive rabbit hole. So, you know, caution always.
They say one of the things that ChatGPT 5 has, and they're called hallucinations, is much, much less hallucinations in the answers that they're returning. And I think there are other fields of AI that don't involve an LLM. I don't think it's all LLMs, as far as I know. Anyway, back to you, Roy.
Yeah, almost by definition, text-based AIs are large language models.
Right, but there's other things like, you know, like if you're designing a robot or maybe a computer program is all LLMs, but I think there are other functions of AI that are not text-based, really, you know, that are more, you know, like computer language-based. And by the way, I on ChatGPT-5, I asked it to design a program that will help me get faster at code. And what it returned was fabulous. It was just fabulous. And I showed it to a guy who actually wrote a program to help people get faster at Morse code, and he said he's going to integrate some of the suggestions that ChatGPT-5 made into his own program.
Z-U-O-E-Y.
Yes. Jeff?
Hi, Roy. I really have to chime in and say that anyone who is going down that rabbit hole and not basing, you know, the safety and security of their family and the future of their family on stuff like that is really has to be instructed that that's not a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I understand. I like new shiny things. I like cocktail party tricks. But, you know, again, I'm not 100% against it. I just urge excessive caution because there are a lot of different stories, legitimate stories of people who kind of screwed up their lives either temporarily or permanently. It's an interesting tool. We don't know enough about it. It's capable of doing interesting things. It's capable of screwing up in ridiculous ways. You know, and people are getting emotionally attached and falling in love with fake personalities and following the advice of AI software when it's not legitimately, you know, foolproof. So, again, I understand both ends of the spectrum. I don't think it's about to take over the world tomorrow, but it's going to screw up a lot more lives than the guy who had bromism and the other guy who had delusions of grandeur.
But on the other hand, on the positive side of it, on the positive side, again, for searching for jobs, how can I go to a job board like Indeed or Glassdoor or LinkedIn and tell it to find me a job listed by companies that are in the creative field? You can't do that just by going to Indeed, and I don't know of a way anyway. So in that way, it's absolutely fantastic.
Thank you, Tupil. If I was willing to be deceived, thinking that I was sending my daughter somewhere positive and she was reinforcing that from 10,000 miles away, you know, I might be willing to believe that as well, if I was willing to be deceived.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it has to do with people taking things that they don't quite understand for granted and assuming that a guy who's trying to be the first trillionaire is telling you the truth about everything. I'm very, very suspicious of Sam Altman. I you know, shades of Elon Musk. I think it's deja vu all over again, unfortunately. Again, there's something to AI, and it might even get better over time, but we don't know. We don't know if it'll get better. We don't know if it'll hit a wall. We don't know if you can fix the hallucinations. It's very difficult to quantify the percentage of hallucinations. It sort of depends upon what kind of questions you ask AI. But I just, again, I want to keep people up to date. I want to keep them knowledgeable about what's going on, but I also want to caution them not to rely on magic black boxes, because that's at this point what they are.
WB2BS, so what's coming?
Sure, Frank.
Yeah, first of all, and probably somebody here who's a lot more well-versed on this than I am, is I think there is another class of AI called machine learning or deep learning. Am I right on that?
Not really. It's the same thing. Machine learning is where you set up a lot of samples and proper responses, and that's how you train all of these AIs. Each thing it's exposed to, you try and figure out how to deal with it, and you adjust a bunch of knobs in order to optimize it, and that's the machine learning. That's the use for NVIDIA's graphic boards that do a lot of parallel processing and such. So it's just another aspect of large language models.
You know, you hear about all the negative, you hear about all the times that it made a big mistake, but you don't hear about the millions and millions and millions of queries that it came back and didn't make a mistake. Like in coming up with programming language, you know, programming routines for a certain task. It's actually writing code now at a very very, very high level.
And yet there are all kinds of precautionary tales. There was an article I read just the other day that physicians who were being assisted by large language models are missing more cancers than they usually do. There's all kinds of strange little problems with AI diagnostics. They tend to, I think, with mammography, they pick up more abnormalities, but they also pick up a lot more false positives. So, you know, when you finally figure it out, it doesn't turn out as good. There's billions of dollars that want to be trillions of dollars being pushed into public relations to promote everything with AI. There's a lot of very, very nice stories with AI. And, you know, there are a lot of YouTubers who are at the fringes of the AI community who are real gung-ho and think that they're conscious entities and all kinds of nonsense. You know, the super genius, the idea that Sammy Boy promotes that in a couple of years there will be genius AIs capable of giving us infinite abundance of every resource we could ever have is nonsense. It's completely nonsense. It's based on absolutely nothing. So, I mean, I'm sorry. Hype is very popular. We've been hyped about all kinds of things. And occasionally it turns out to be somewhat true. A lot of times it's false. And I think, again, this is an overhyped bubble technology. I don't think it really deserves trillions of dollars of investment. And basically building twice as many electric generator systems and using up water all over the country for the sake of some poor lonely guy having a make-believe girlfriend. You know, again, your mileage might vary. I always like to offer a word of caution because there's a lot of people who are making a lot of money who are hyping it up and down and all around.
I do, guys.
Say again?
DC again.
What, Rich?
Now, just one comment. Do you know who Scott Galloway is?
No, I might have heard him, but nothing sticks in my head. Why?
He's a professor at NYU and said something that on a negative side that I really do believe in. He said people are trying to pick out which are to be the top companies in AI, and he feels that all these companies pouring billions into AI are not going to be able to distinguish their LLMs from the next guys. So forget trying to pick the company that comes up with far away the best LLM of its competition. He said it's not going to happen. They're all basically the same. And that I agree with.
Okay, but keep in mind that Scott Galloway is not an IT man. He's not an AI guy. He's a professor of marketing at NYU.
But he's a very smart guy. Very smart guy. And he's also heavily into podcasting about financial markets.
Well, there are certainly a lot of people interested in that. Anyway, I don't know this guy. He's a professor. Some of my professors were brilliant. Some of my professors were a little on the goofy side. Just because you're a professor doesn't mean you know everything. Some people might suggest that because you're a professor, you probably don't know everything, but I'm not quite biased that way, but I don't know. So I'm not going to make a comment positive or negative. It's going to be very difficult, but it is a bubble. There is not as many AI. The number of AI companies are more than needed, and they all take up really a lot of resources that this world cannot tolerate being taken up for redundancy's sake. So inevitably, like all things, there will be a settling and a bubble will burst, and billions, if not these guys get their way, trillions of dollars will evaporate from the money supply one fine day and wreak havoc among us. But we'll have to see what the future holds.
Well, the way the bubble will burst is what the Chinese did with DeepSeek. They came out with a competitive LLM at 20% of the cost of what other companies are saying it costs them to develop and use LLMs. So that I believe, too, that, you know, the more that it's going to devalue some of these other LLMs.
Well, AC2GS, by the way. Well, you know, actually, you would think that that would have already happened. You would have thought NVIDIA, after the announcement of DeepSeek, NVIDIA took a hit, and the price of their stock and the cap went down, but it went back up. So for whatever reason, and there's not a lot of other companies that are promoting that they're capable of highly functional LLMs using very few NVIDIA boards. So that's curious, and some people have said that the Chinese lie about a lot of things, and they lied about the number of boards that were used, and I haven't seen anyone kind of prove it or repeat what they did, so I'm a little confused by exactly what the true story behind DeepSeek might be. They might have done what they said they did, but they might not have done what they said they did. It wouldn't be the first group of Chinese technicians who kind of fibbed, or even Koreans who fibbed. A lot of technical guys kind of fib. So it's yet to be decided. There's a lot of money on it, and people are putting even more and more money into it. And I don't think it's a matter of if the bubble bursts, but when the bubble bursts, and in what general direction the bubble's going to burst. Because I really don't think you could maintain trillion-dollar economies for just one technology that has been hyped too much already. So, again, maybe I'm overly cautious. You know, maybe I wouldn't have invested in Apple when it was 50 cents per stock. But, you know, what can I tell you? I didn't lose anything significant anywhere along the line. So, you know, maybe I'm a little too cautious, but maybe I'm not.
I'm shocked. You won't believe everything Tim Apple sells, the B2BX,
so. Oh, Apple has disappointed so many people. Their customer base is suing them for Apple Thinks. Because they basically lied a year and a half, 2 years ago. They said that they were coming up with a neural chip, and along with the neural chip, they would have software that would make everyone's phone a genius. And so far, the latest comment that they've made is they don't really expect Siri to be terribly smarter until maybe 2027. So, I mean, they are really disappointed their customer base, and they're having, I understand, some problems. You know, their stuff is really overpriced these days, and they really have not made any revolutionary improvements. They've just been slight evolutionary ticks. So people are starting to be scared about Apple. I don't know. They may get their second breath, but they've kind of let a lot of people down over the last few years.
Also a one-product company.
B2BX, so here. According to the Tech Stuff podcast, the Tara Price and how somebody or other does that now, she said on Friday that Apple says they're going to have the new version of Siri spring of next year. But, you know, just like Elon stuff, maybe that'll be delayed and delayed. Anyway, but Yeah, I'd love to see Siri do a couple more tricks. I really like not having to stare at the screen with my reading. And sorry about that. I don't know why I dropped there. Anyway, so that's interesting. The other thing, I guess the next revolution, so they say, is supposed to be quantum computing, right? And then I have some comments on the job market issue. Go ahead.
Quantum computing is an interesting one as well, and very vague and somewhat unjustified. So far, it hasn't been able to do anything useful. I did a story on it, I think about a year ago, in which so far the best they've been able to do, one of the many things they like about the concept of quantum mechanics and quantum computing is that you could have your quantum bits occupy everything between 1 and 0 simultaneously. And then, that's the whole thing about quantum mechanics is that it exists in infinite states until you collapse the wave function and then it gives you the answer. So what they've all been trying to do is factoring. It's very important in cryptography. What happens is they take a very large prime number, multiply it by another very large prime number, and the product is very difficult to bring back into those two prime numbers. It takes a lot of computational power on usual computers. But with a quantum computer, theoretically, you can solve that in a finite amount of time. Problem is, so far, they've only been able to do 3 times 5. You know, they gave it 15, they said factor 15, and it said 3 times 5. That's not a problem. I can do 3 times 5. You can do 3 times 5. We can all do 3 times 5. It's doing the 20-digit prime numbers. That's the problem. And it hasn't been demonstrated to be able to do anything even vaguely close to that. So, again, it's one of those technologies that has an enormous amount of a promise, but so far almost no result. And, you know, people are investing, again, hundreds of millions of dollars, and it may pay off. Or it may not pay off. We'll have to see. Again, very interesting technology. I wouldn't invest in it with my last dollar.
I guess the quantum computer will be my side order with my fusion reactor, right?
Well, fusion reactors are always 20 years in the future. I haven't actually heard too many people predicting when a functional quantum computer will be available. I find it fascinating that far the only designs I've seen pictures of make them look like chandeliers. The chandelier part is actually not so much the quantum computer, but the cryogenic device that keeps the quantum bits near to 0 degrees Kelvin because they have to cool them. Any kind of thermal noise will untangle them and just ruin the device. So most of a quantum computer these days is still the cryogenic freezing unit.
Thank you, Tapio.
Yeah, Jeff?
You just said the magic word, because there's a postdoc in my lab who comes into my office every once in a while declaring that some fancy technology is about to take off, and it's happening in India, and nobody knows about it, or the DOD has already classified it or whatever. And the one that he came in most recently was like, no one's ever going to hear about this, but quantum entanglement is, long-range detection. It's going to defeat all of the cloaking devices that we have for whatever we want to call them for our B-2 bombers. And as soon as an entangled photon detects something, it just makes the whole thing show up. And it's just so absurd on so many levels, and every single thing you've talked about, where you very calmly and quietly said, this nonsense. I think you should be saying it a bit louder, because a lot of people are easily deceived.
Yeah, thanks, Steph. But the problem is, as lovely as Limark's repeater is, it's a repeater. Not that many people are going to hear me scream, and some of them are tired of listening to me scream. It's just, again, I don't, it's not as though I'm anti-technology and this is all nonsense and it's a waste of time. quantum entanglement is a fascinating subject. Some of our fellow hams thought that it was just highly theoretical, but in reality, there are physics labs that are set up to demonstrate entanglement. But it's a very erratic type of phenomena, although it kind of introduces the interesting to me concept of non-locality. General normal human beings think that you have to be near something to affect it. Non-locality suggests that in some way we are close to everything that we're far away from, which doesn't make that much sense, but that's what non-locality can be. So I think all of these things are legitimate scientific concepts and require a lot of time and effort. But when people try to monetize these damn things, they lie through their teeth. I don't know if they're delusional themselves or they're just liars. I could assume Elon is just a liar. But I'm sure there are others that are just delusional. Those four guys who kind of woke up one day and decided that AIs had consciousness and we were enslaving them. The guys need mental health.
Roger. I mean, when I took physical chemistry, one of the tests, and the only question on the test was to calculate with a pen and paper and computer, or handheld, actually we didn't have computers, a handheld calculator, the probability of a hydrogen atom in the tip of our pencil being simultaneously there or at the center of the sun. And the only cautionary note at the bottom of the question was that the calculator wouldn't be much help because it was no way to dimension it to be that improbable. So we had to do some whatever fancy logarithmic or mathematical tricks to come up with the actual number because the size of the orbital actually had a probability, yes, that the electron was there and it was also here. The improbability was immense. The probability that the electron was hanging around the actual nucleus was whatever, it's predictable. And people believing that things are going to come to fruition based on what marketing says is absolute nonsense. I agree with you 100%, and I'd rather hear more about ham radio. QSL?
Well, yeah, I find all these things fascinating in their original concept. It's just the marketing guys always get in on the act because the marketing guys can get the money. And the money is almost as important as the science to some people and much more important than other people than the science, unfortunately. So you have to kind of use a bullshit BS meter, sorry guys, BS meter and understand that hype surrounds almost anything and everything. And you just have to find some happy medium. When we were told about the room temperature superconductor from Korea, my BS meter was pinned, and that was proved out. So, you never know. One of these days, someone might be very clever and discover something that falsely pins my BS meter, and I'll apologize when that time comes, but it hasn't yet. I agree with that. Thanks, everyone. I'll still kind of consider doing these AI discussions because I think it's extremely important. But I too think we should talk about amateur radio as well. So, unless anyone has any closing comments, we'll move on.
82VHD, brief.
Sure, Jim.
I'll remind everybody that he closes his net with some interesting thoughts every week. And they talk to one circumstance, among others, of the kind of person all of us have met at least one of, who's full of facts, quote unquote, but has no ability to reason through them. Yet we are all, many of us are given positive accolades to AI, which intends to get all the facts, quote unquote, has no intention of reasoning through them. And people think that it's something to be trusted. It's fake intelligence. That is all. Back to that. Thanks, Roy.
Okay. Yeah, I knew a very nice guy who had memorized the internal medicine handbook. If you mentioned any ailment, he could recite the specific paragraphs. Unfortunately, if you asked him to kind of synthesize some aspect using that information, all he could do is recite those entries. So he was a recording device. He, at that point in his life, I hope he matured out of that. He was not quite ready to process the information. He just could record it and transmit it.
Very good example. Thank you.
Okey-doke. This is AC2GS. This is the Limar Technical Net. We're open for regular business. Questions, comments, topics, please hit that push to talk. Give me your first name, your call sign, whether it's amateur radio related or science and technology related.
PC.
WB2BX.
Rich and Frank recognize. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list for tonight? Someone was very, very noisy, about 95% noise. Might have been Sam, not 100% sure.
82 BZS.
Okay, now I had a double. So the first gentleman, try again. Speak slowly and loudly.
AC2BZI, Eddie, just checking in.
Okay, very good. Sam, if you're out there, I mean, wiggle your antenna, turn it, reorient it. Maybe it'll get through to the repeater.
On a scale of Michael Jackson to Casey Anthony, how much do you love kids?
Okay, Sam, if that's you, try and figure out some way of getting into the repeater. I don't know what the problem is, but you're 99% noise. So there'll be openings, throughout the night, so I'm sure you'll be able to get in. Just figure out what's blocked right now. I don't know. Rich, what's your question for tonight?
As it is known today, things will get better in the fall. Why is that? That's the question.
Okay. Theoretically, we're getting too much of a good thing. The sunspot activity is very active, but so are the geomagnetic storms active. And, you know, it's the old problem with if a little bit of something is good for you, a lot of it is great for you. We're getting too much of a good thing with the geomagnetic storms are just ripping the structure of F1 and F2 ionospheres. You need to have a ionized F1 and F2 layer in order to refract 10-meter and 6-meter back onto the Earth. But if you really smack it around enough to destabilize the ionospheres structurally themselves, if they're not in the right place for the refraction, again, I used the metaphor a couple of weeks ago. It's like having a magnifying glass but dropping it and it breaking into 10 or 20 shards. It's still refract, but it's not going to give you a focal point that it did when it was intact. The good thing is the F1 and F2 restores and regenerates itself, left alone. So as we approach the fall, the amount of geomagnetic storms will lessen, and the F1 and F2 layer will restabilize themselves.
Does it just have to do with storms, or isn't there... Doesn't absorption come into play also, the way the angle of the sun is and how much sun the different layers are getting in the summer versus the fall and the winter? Roy, you're rebooting?
Sorry, guys, I got kicked off of All-Star. Rich, you want to repeat the last thing you said?
Yeah. I mean, storms do come into play, but I think it has to do with absorption or how much sun is hitting, how much rays are hitting the different layers during different seasons of the year. I think it has something to do with that also, storms.
Well, yeah, I mean, during the spring and the summer, the inclination of the Earth is such that the rays of the sun are more condensed on the northern hemisphere. During our winter and fall, it's the other way around. So, yeah, it has to do with the intensity of the sunspot activity. If the sunspot activity and the geomagnetic storms are more concentrated locally in our area, then it causes this problem. In this case, the geomagnetic storms are so strong that they completely destroy the structural integrity of the ionospheres, which reform if you give them a little time. And, you know, so when we change seasons, we'll change the inclination. So the inclination will be such that over a given area, it's going to be less of radiation from the sun. And we'll kind of rebuild our F1 and F2, and hopefully propagation will be decent for fall and winter, and then probably sometime in the middle of spring we'll get the same problem.
I'm very surprised, happily so, that 20 meters is open just about every night. I had a CISO with a guy in Colombia, South America, and the next CISO was in Sweden with the vertical. So it's just amazing the variation that you could get on 20 meters at night. And into the early morning. So, at least that's a good thing that's happening now. During the day, the bands are dead. Also from non-use, but also because propagation is so horrible.
Yeah, I mean, it ends up being a combination of both. But, you know, we could use more activity and we could use less geomagnetic storms. But, you know, it depends what you like. If you happen to like 20 and, say, 40, it's good times. But if you like 80 and 160, I'm sure they're suffering a significant degree of background noise that obscures a lot of their signals. So six of one, half a dozen of the other. It's sort of a zero-sum game. Everyone has their favorite bands, and unfortunately, most people are just not flexible. You know, they don't like to just jump from the bad bands to the good bands and then back to the bad bands when they get better, and, you know, are just kind of, ambidextrous, if you will. They tend to develop favorites, and, you know, they get a little sluggish in switching off to the more functional bands.
You bring up an interesting point. Why is the noise level so much higher, like on 40 and 80 during the summer? Is it all static electricity? And if so, why in the summer?
Well, 80 and 160 are much more sensitive to the D ionospheric band. And the more you energize the D band, the more noise you produce. In the case of the D band, it's very easy to become too much of a good thing. You generally want it very, very slightly active. Slightly active will give you enough energy to refract the signals into bouncing across the Earth. If you energize the D band too much, which happens during sunspot cycles, maximums, which happens during the summer months, then that injects more random noise along with the refraction and can obscure a lot of signals. So 80 and 160 is better during sunspot minimums, is better during winters, and, the exact opposite conditions that make 10 and 6 meters great.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
I also find on 80, of course, at night, or in the daytime, if you're on 80, and you always can pick up